Well, happy Monday, everybody. Hope you had a nice weekend. What are you chortling about already, Shannon? We've barely started here. We've got five words out, and you're chortling.
Jay's fans had a good weekend.
Well, they got a pitcher. They lost a second baseman.
Yeah.
Although, but I'm not chagrined by the second base thing because I mean, you're not going to.
Well, you can't give Stan.
I love Semien. Everybody loves Semien. We love what he did. He had a fantastic season. I don't doubt he'll be just as good for the next couple of years. But I'm not paying a guy $25 million until he's 38 years old. Yeah. I mean, I don't think the
7-year contract, that was the thing that shocked me. 7 years.
Oof. Like, for sure you go 3. You probably go 4. 5 would be iffy. 7? No chance.
Yeah.
And especially under the circumstances, given the amount of money you're going to have to spend on your first baseman and your shortstop, at least. So I'm happy for Semien. He got lots of cake. And then they went out and got Gausman for their rotation, who's pretty good, right?
And does that mean Ray's gone?
I suspect. I don't think they can afford to do both. They get Gausman. $110 million for 5? That's 22.
Yeah, 22 a year, yeah.
22 a year.
Yeah.
You know, you still got Ryu for another, 2 years, John? I think at 20?
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know. Can you put another $25 or $28 million maybe on Ray in a multi-year deal?
This is where you're doing your accounting, you have to look down the timeline a little bit to say what you're signing other guys for, like Bichette and like Guerrero, right? This is what you have to do. And if you're keeping Hernandez too, right? So this is what you have to do.
Well, and I keep raising Hernandez as a trade possibility, and not because I don't like him. I love him and I love what he's done, but I think you've got to be realistic. Yeah. And you've got to say, all right, somewhere we got to bend. And okay, you bent a little bit with Semien. You know, we hoped at the beginning of this free agent fracas that you'd sign at least one of those three big free agents. Hoped maybe two. Now it appears it's going to be none. Mats is gone. Semien's gone. And I don't think, you know, with the Gausman signing, I don't think. Ray's in the picture. Do you?
No, but the Gausman signing to me is as good as Ray. So that to me is a trade off that I wouldn't mind making.
He's really good. Well, no, I don't. Okay. 1 year versus 1 year. He had a good year out West.
Yeah.
But Ray.
Now, do you think this means Biggio? Do you think Biggio is the second baseman now?
I thought Biggio was the third baseman. now I think Biggio is, he looks like the most obvious candidate to be the second baseman, unless they go get somebody. Yeah. And are you looking for a third baseman now?
They should have been looking for a third baseman all along. So, no, in my opinion. So,
well, are you going to go get one of the $30 million third basemen?
I don't know. That's the tough one. I don't know. And of course, this thing is all going to change and blow up on Wednesday and Thursday with the CBA destructing. And that's why we're going to have Shy on Thursday to talk all about this stuff. So,
well. We're going to deal with hockey today. Mike Zeisberger and Scott Burnside will join us, a couple of our chums. And we'll address the change in Montreal in the front office and why there has been no change yet in Vancouver and the change in Toronto. The change in Toronto has been in their performance on the ice, and it's been plenty good. Burnside, Zeisberger, when we come back after these messages. Mm-hmm. Well, Monday is good a time as any for a little puck chatter. Mike Zeisberger, Scott Burnside, both with us today. Where to begin? Well, let's start with the Montreal Canadiens, who are the first of the flailing teams in the National Hockey League to fire the gun, and they hit their general manager, Mark Bergevin, out. Is that the right move, Scotty?
To my mind, they should have fired him the 2 minutes after he drafted Logan Mayhew in the draft. That would have been the appropriate time to make that kind of move. But I will say, and of course, maybe there's no good way to do it, but when it leaks out that, you know, Scott Mellenby resigns because it appears that he's no longer in the, you know, sort of has an opportunity to rise within the Montreal organization, and it leaks that Jeff Gorton will come in as, you know, to ride herd on things during the search for a GM and will maintain a significant hockey role, essentially in charge of hockey ops, which is a great hire. You know, it was a bit of a messy thing, but I give the Habs credit at least for saying, you know what, maybe we should have done this weeks and weeks ago, but we're going to do it now because we have a lot of work to do leading up to the trade deadline. We have a lot of work leading up to the draft, and lots of NHL clubs do it backwards, right? I mean, how many teams keep a guy around in a position where they're making decisions for the future where he has no future? And I say he because they're all men at this stage, but lots of teams don't do it this way. So did it take too long? Probably. Should it have been done before the season started? Probably. But it needed to be done, and it got done at least in a quasi timely fashion, especially compared to some of the other teams who look like they should be doing the same kind of thing.
Isn't it safe to say, though, Z, that Bergeron probably bought himself this amount of time at least with the performance of his hockey club in the playoffs last year?
No, definitely, Bob. And that was the point I was going to bring up. I mean, wasn't that long ago? It was, you know, midway through last season where Bergevin's job status was up in the air then. I mean, there were calls for his head at the time. Obviously, with some of the COVID issues that the Montreal Canadiens, you know, had to go through last year and the compressed schedule. I mean, those are legitimate concerns, but the fact remains they made a coaching change. They fired Claude Julien. They brought in Dominique Ducharme. I mean, if this team didn't sneak into the playoffs right at the end of the season, I'm not so sure that Mark Bergevin would have even survived the offseason. And the fact is, I mean, his contract was coming up. There's reports that he wanted a longer-term deal. And I agree with Scotty. I mean, if you're going to turn the page, don't sit on the you-know-what and wait for it to happen. Be proactive. So good on the Montreal Canadiens for doing exactly that.
Carey Price's return is apparently imminent. I'm not even going to ask the question if it's too late for the Montreal Canadiens, because it clearly is too late for the Montreal Canadiens. And yet there is nothing but evidence that a goaltender can change the fortunes of a hockey club almost overnight. That's not going to happen though here, is it?
Well, I wonder if you had a podcast during the 18-19 season and were, you know, Mike Yeo got fired in St. Louis and team was last in the standings and, yeah, you know, ended up winning a Stanley Cup in June of 19. Is Carey Price, well, Carey Price, you know, to Zize's point, you know, maybe all this happens if the Leafs can actually close the deal in that first playoffs. This is all done in mid-May or whenever last year, but it didn't happen that way. And it didn't happen that way in large part because Carey Price remains, you know, whatever issues that he's going through, and you know that the hockey pales in comparison, goes without saying, to whatever he needs to deal with in his personal life. But he is one of those few goaltenders who could come into a situation and affect immediate change and get this team back into a playoff hunt.
Yeah, and Bob, you know, like, I mean, from what Scott said there, I mean, he used the example of the St. Louis Blues. Well, the St. Louis Blues, and I know this is a one-off, but it shows, you know, it's from the old comedic line. So you're saying there's a chance.
Yeah.
You know, they did it with Jordan Binnington, who hadn't even started a game when that run started as a rookie and led them to the Stanley Cup. Now, you know, much like Vegas going to the final as an expansion team, these things are few and far between. But if you're going to say, you know, if Jordan Binnington can do it, then can Carey Price do it? Well, you know, you have to take into account the team around him and management and that. But yeah, I mean, I would think that Carey Price, if anybody could do it, Carey Price would have a better chance than Jordan Binnington did at that time. And he managed to pull off that Cinderella story. So is it doubtful? Yes. But, you know, I think the bigger problem for the Montreal Canadiens is the division they play in, because you've got Toronto, you've got Florida, you've got Tampa Bay. And then I really don't think that the Boston Bruins are going to, you know, keep treading water. I expect them to start trending upward. So when you put them in that position and you look at the teams in the Metro Division, I don't think there's going to be five Atlantic teams that get in. I think the Montreal Canadiens, I mean, coupled with their bad start, but one of the problems that they have is just there's too many good teams in their division.
Well, and forget about the division. When you have the Metropolitan that, has how many teams over 500 right now? That's the other part of this. The other thing is that, listen, Carey Price, it could be a huge difference maker, but they don't score very many goals right now. That to me has been a bigger issue to them this year, is their inability to score. And, you know, they've given a lot of responsibility to a few young guys that haven't had good seasons. Nick Suzuki has not had a good season.
Who, by the way, Sean, got his extension at the beginning of the season.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, Bob's point about, Bergevin got a little extra time because of what they did last year. Last year was a fluke. Let's face it. Last year was an utter, utter fluke, and only happened because of the Canadian division, whether it was the Tavares injury. Yes, Carey Price and Shea Weber were remarkable, and neither of them have been on the team so far this year. But let's face it, winning three rounds of hockey last year was truly a fluke. And I don't care if Montreal fans are mad at me. It is true.
Well, it's become apparent that it was true with their performance this year. I don't think any of us were misled last year by the way they played. We kept expecting them to fall on their face. But you do have to remember, Shannon, they did beat the Vegas Golden Knights, too, on the way to the Stanley Cup final. And they are no slouch. And they are not part, we're not part of the Canadian division. And you can make the argument, look at the teams that they did beat. They beat three pretty good teams to get to the final. So we give them credit. I guess my point is, how much of that exactly was on Carey Price's back and how much of it was the rest of the team? Burnside.
Well, I think you, and again, you know, it goes to the construct of the team, right? I mean, you know that Shea Weber is unlikely to play again and a huge blow. Mm-hmm. So you can't minimize that, but you have to plan for it. Joel Edmondson has been out a very solid part of an imposing blue line that, along with Carey Price, and I think your point's an excellent one, Bob. Yeah, they beat the Vegas, the Golden Knights. They also beat a pretty good Winnipeg team. I don't care whether they're Canadian or not. Decent team.
Dominated them.
That beat a very good Edmonton team. So, but what happens to that, that team bears very little resemblance to the team that has taken almost every night this year. I mean, even the presence and now the absence of a guy like Corey Perry, at some point it's on management to look at your team and say, geez, do we have enough leadership? Do we have guys that can, you know, help us through a rough patch? And if you don't, isn't it incumbent on you to try and find them? And they failed to do that. The whole offer sheet thing with Carolina and Kotkaniemi, I don't care how that kid is playing in Carolina. I don't care how many minutes he makes tonight. It was embarrassing for the Montreal Canadiens to have that happen to them. It's a team that seemed ill-prepared to follow up, whether it was fluke or not, a trip to the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah.
Before I don't want to dwell on the Montreal Canadiens. Their future seems to be, well, certainly in their own hands, but the immediate future looks bleak. But will this interim general manager be mandated to make trades, make moves, or attempt to do so to reconstruct this lineup? Or do we think maybe they can be good enough? What do you think, Z?
Well, I mean, look, Bob, there still is some talent there. I mean, young talent. I mean, Caulfield, Romanoff on the back end, Suzuki we mentioned. So what I think, I mean, Jeff Gorton is in here now. They're looking for a general manager, but I think at the same time, they're going to assess it. And, you know, that's usually a, you know, it gets frustrating sometimes when you hear the suits running teams going, well, we have to assess things. But I think in this case, it is legit. And it was fascinating to listen to Jeff Molson's press conference this morning, because at one point he said, when the word rebuild was brought up, we're not afraid of that word. So, you know, when you've got the guy at the top of the heap saying that, I think that Montreal Canadiens fans should brace themselves. It's not necessarily that they're going to do it, but it is a possibility. And, you know, when the captain of the ship says that, you better prepare yourself. So there are some young pieces in place, sure. But, you know, you got to look at, like we talked about, the entire Eastern Conference, the Atlantic Division. Whatever we do, are we good enough to be competitive in the next year and a half, not only in the short term or the long term? Because Shea Weber's not going to be there anymore. How long is Carey Price going to be there? Those are the hard questions that this organization is going to have to face.
I'm also intrigued by the notion of a rebuild. The word to me generally implies a team that has put their pieces together, both experience and youth, but more experience, and has failed, and now tries to unload all of that experience on somebody else. Who are the guys that the Montreal Canadiens would dangle for trade? Who are the guys that would have underperformed that are in their 30s who might be attractive on a short-term deal in order to get something back for the Montreal Canadiens? That's the dilemma that I face. I'm not sure. Other than their kids would be the young guys, the 21, 2, 3-year-olds, they'd be movable. But you don't want to move them if you're rebuilding, do you?
No, but I think that, like, a guy, and I'll throw it over to Scotty after this, but the guy that jumps out at me is Jeff Petrie. I mean, he's having, you know, I was listening to a Capitals broadcast the other day against the Canadiens, and the play-by-play guy said Jeff Petrie may have turned in the worst performance as a defenseman he's seen in a few years. That having been said, people remember how good he was last year, how good he was in the playoffs. And, you know, we've seen by some of the contracts that were thrown out, you know, over the offseason, that defense is premium and people will pay for defense. And, you know, it's that old notion that, you know, right now Jeff Petrie looks like he's broken. There's always going to be one of 32 GMs or one of 31, other than the team that the guy's playing for, that are going to come out and say, you know what, we can fix this guy. So yeah. When I look at their lineup, Jeff Petrie is the guy that jumps off the page at me. Scotty?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's not a roster chock full of, you know, significant players on expiring contracts or a player, you know, Petrie's under contract through 24, 25. I have to check that. Yes, through 24,
yeah, 25. That's right. And yeah, for $6.25 million.
Right. It's a lot, but maybe you retain some salary, whatever. And I think Mike's point is an excellent one. I mean, there's a guy, I mean, there was a period of time for quite a bit of last season when you would have put Jeff Petrie in your Norris Trophy discussion. Yeah. That's how good he was. And, you know, Ben Chiarot's on an expiring deal, has a limited no trade. Brett Kulak's an interesting guy. You know, I think, you know, when you talk about trade deadline, often it's just, you know, the depth on the back end that is attractive to GMs who are looking at a potential Stanley Cup run. But there's not a lot there. And Bobby, it's a great point, because there's not this guy will bring back a first round pick or a group of assets. There's no Jack Eichel here to be traded.
Exactly.
So that's also the reality that Jeff Gorton's going to have to sort through, because, you know, I mean, the old cliche is, you know, I mean, to rush and make some changes at the deadline or between now and the deadline to, you know, look like you're affecting change is often counterproductive. So, you know, Jeff Gorton's a smart guy and he's done good work in the NHL. Yep. I don't think there's any pressure on him to do anything right away, but the team continues like it is, they're going to have to do something, or as much as possible at the deadline, to prepare for the draft and for next season.
A couple of things. first of all, the Petrie criticism is fair. But remember last year, it was Sherratt, Weber, Edmondson, and Petrie. Mm-hmm. And for the most part this season, Petrie's been alone. He's been, and so when you elevate a guy to the number one status when he's not really used to the number one status, although he's been great on the power play at times in his career, that's difficult. The other guy that we haven't mentioned, and we know that Montreal fans are rather pricklish about this one, is how the team managed the Philip Deneau contract negotiations, and the fact that Deneau is playing in LA and Deneau had an effective playoff, and could Canadians have signed him earlier for similar money? And Marc Bergevin elected not to, and did not want to do the deal until a certain point, could not get the deal done either, because Deneau at one point said, "Okay, I'm going to go to free market." So those are the types of things I think that have weighed heavily in Montreal over the last little while.
But John, is Philip Deneau a $6 million player? I understand how good he is at checking, and we saw what he did through the playoffs, but do you want to go long-term to give a guy a contract like that? Is he a $6 million player? Everybody's got their own opinions. I don't think he is.
Not a chance.
Plus, he's going to get to be reunited with Marc Bergevin when Marc Bergevin goes to the Kings and whenever he heads up in LA with his pals there. So it'll all work out.
Yeah. So the one key thing, the biggest job Jeff Gorton's going to have relatively soon is to find that bilingual general manager. That's going to be, forget about players. It's going to be to find who is going to be, and that bilingual general manager in the end will end up being the conduit for the media, for the public, for this franchise in the province of Quebec. That's going to be Jeff's biggest issue. The question will be, how quickly will Jeff do it? And who's on that list that can be a difference maker for this organization, albeit they can't put pucks in the net or stop the puck from going in the net.
That raises a really interesting question that I guess we've all wondered about from time to time. If you own the Montreal Canadiens, could you even contemplate bringing in an Anglophone GM? Could you get the French media and the French fans to understand if you stood up and said, this guy is the best candidate? He doesn't speak French, or he speaks very limited French. We understand that, but he's the best guy for the job. And don't you, as fans or even in the media, can't you understand this is the best guy? Could that even happen, Scotty?
Well, no, but what you've seen the Habs do by hiring Jeff Gorton is do the perfect end around. They should have done it long ago. And I think in some ways, Jeff Molson acknowledged that Marc Bergevin needed help. And maybe every NHL team needs help, but especially a team in a market like Montreal, where, you know, Marc Bergevin has had to do everything. And, you know, it's a hard place. And I completely get that. That is part of the deal. If you're going to be a coach or a GM in Montreal, you better speak both languages. And I have zero problem with it, because that's the marketplace and that's what the fans demand, and they pay the freight. But by hiring Jeff Gorton, who essentially is your de facto GM now anyway, and he's an Anglo, now you hire, you know, I talked to somebody today. You know, I know Matthew Darche's name is out there. He's director of player development in Tampa. Really smart guy. I mean, Daniel Briere knows that marketplace well, incredibly bright hockey mind. But whoever they hire, A, he better get along with Jeff Gorton, but he also has to understand that his job is not going to be like 31 other NHL GMs. That would be my guess.
Yeah. And you know, Bob, when you talk about this Francophone thing, it was interesting that somebody made the point that during Jeff Molson's press conference today was fascinating to me, that somebody brings up the point, and it was an English speaking journalist talking about the fact that, you know, maybe 2/3 of Molson's answers were in French.
Sure.
And he goes, if I'm listening to this press conference in French and in these French things and are confused because I don't understand the language, then what would it be like for an entire fan base to try to understand a coach who didn't speak French? And I think that we have, you know, you have to understand, okay, Montreal is not like the other 31 markets, and people can talk about, well, it's not fair and it's not an even playing field. Well, whatever it is unique. It always has been unique. And you have to, you just have to accept it. And the people from the outside that sometimes say, and you hear this a lot from the Anglophone media outside of Quebec, you know, that's not right. You know, they're stuck on this. Well, you know what? Go there, live there, see what the culture is like, okay? And put yourself in the position of being a fan in that market. And that's why every time I you know, hear one of these people from the outside of Quebec whining about why do they need somebody that speaks French? Well, that's ignorant, and you really don't understand what the situation is there, at least in my opinion.
I you're totally right, Mike. I mean, the bottom line is, though, that in the new structures of hockey operations groups, Jeff Gorton's the general manager, and the guy they're hiring is the assistant general manager. I mean, if this was 20 years ago, that would be their nameplates. But the world has changed, and now we have elevated people in and around, not just in Montreal, but there's how many presidents of hockey operations do you think there are? Like 8 or 9 now, if not more. And that becomes a fact of life. So Gorton becomes the guy behind, he becomes the puppet master. And the general manager is the guy sitting in front of the media at the table, like Jeff Wilson was today.
Well, the interesting thing with that, John, is if you judging by the fans' reaction on social media, okay, it's Patrick Waugh Palooza, okay? The fans are ready to send a limo to Quebec City to bring him in. Let me ask you this. How long do you think Patrick Waugh would sit there and take orders from somebody else?
That's not happening. I don't see, and I, you know, John, to your point, I don't know if the idea is that we want to win and they want to win in Montreal, of course, then it probably doesn't matter what your title is, as long as whoever gets hired can work with Jeff Gorton and Jeff Gorton can work with whoever gets hired. That will be the litmus test on whether the Habs are on the right track. Some teams have been slow to, you know, embrace this kind of thing. I always think the better teams are the ones who have as many smart hockey people in as many positions as possible. And they may not all get along and they may not all speak the same language, but if you're getting the same room and you can come up with an idea and come to some sort of consensus on players and coaches and all those kinds of important personnel decisions, well, your chances of winning are much better. And we'll see whether Montreal can find that combination or not.
The interesting thing about that to me, sorry, Bob, is that Mark did have people around him. You know, Trevor Timmins was a scout and a player personnel guy for a long time. Scott Mellenby's a smart guy. It wasn't as if Mark Bergevin was operating in a vacuum in this last little while. They've still John Sedgwick, who's their cap guy, is a brilliant hockey guy. And the good news is that he's still in the organization at this point. So that, I think that's a positive. But from that perspective, they did have a lot of bodies. You know, over the years, they did have a lot of bodies for Bergevin to rely on. It just wasn't clicking in the end, I guess, between what Bergevin wanted, what Mellenby wanted, Timmins wanted, and Jeff Wilson realized what the fans needed.
We want to move on. We don't spend the entire program on this, but what does this mean for the other failed Canadian franchise in Vancouver, who have been, we've been waiting for a shoe to drop there? Does it make it any easier to make a move there because a move's now been made elsewhere, or are the two completely and utterly unrelated?
Well, I personally think that the momentum is already in place. I mean, the Vancouver ownership, has been known to make, rash decisions before. I'm not so sure this would be a rash one, but I mean, you look at what's going on in Vancouver, Bob. I mean, some of the decisions they made, they gave Travis Green an extension, going into the season. They got contracts for their two young pillars that they thought that this organization was going to be built around. In Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson. And, in Pettersson's case, he has just struggled from the get-go getting out of the gates. And, you know, I by no means do I think goaltending has been the issue. I think that Thatcher Demko has actually been one of the Canucks that has probably played up to expectations, like a lot of his teammates. But then the fans sit there and go, well, you didn't keep Jacob Markstrom. And last I saw, if the Flames weren't first in least amount of goals against in the National Hockey League, they're second. So the fan base is looking around. They're freaking out. Ownership isn't happy. So I would not be surprised to see if there's just a scorched earth blow up of the entire Canucks organization within the next few weeks. If it keeps going.
And by the way, the coincidence today, where is Vancouver playing? In Montreal.
Montreal.
The scorched earth bowl.
Well, yeah. If the reports are true and that the team is actively looking for a coach to replace Travis Green while Travis Green goes to work every day, that's maybe it happens all the time. But it, to me, you know, this is a team that continues to be the, you know, the epitome of dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. You know, Jim Benning has had ample time to construct something meaningful there. Yep. It has been one catastrophe structurally after another. The addition of Oliver Ekman-Larsson is going to, even though I know they disposed of, you know, some unwanted contracts in the short term to Arizona, this Oliver Ekman-Larsson contract is a killer.
Yeah.
And at some point, Mike's, you know, touched on it with Elias Pettersson. There has to be something done. I mean, it's not even regression what has happened to that young player. So how do you, to me, that's the thing. Well, how do you fix it? And I'm not saying you should fire your coach to make Pettersson happy or something, but you have to do something. Mm-hmm. He is your best player. And he is, I think last night he was on the fourth line, wasn't out at the end of the game when they were trying to tie it, ended up with a one goal loss to Boston. So what's the plan to fix your most important player? My guess is they don't have one. So I'm curious to see whether they do now follow suit in Montreal. And frankly, you know, it's hard to imagine Travis Green carrying on. 2 years ago, would we not have discussed him as a possible Canadian Olympic coach? Or
Well, and for that reason, I think the general manager is going to go in Montreal before the coach goes. And I think that's the difficult part of the equation.
In Vancouver, you mean.
I think that's the more likely scenario. And for the reasons you're talking about. And if you look at the decisions that were made, are you going to blame the coach for the Pettersson signing? Are you blaming him for all the things that were the responsibility of the general manager? I have no vested interest in dumping on Benning, but he's the guy. He made the decision.
I tell you what, Bob, I tell you what, though. I tell you what. And he had a really good summer. If you're talking to people in and around Vancouver, he did almost everything that every fan of the Vancouver Canucks wanted to do. Got rid of contracts, got his two guys signed. Scotty's right about the Ekman-Larsson contract, but at the time it was viewed that the Garland Ekman-Larsson trade was a tremendous boon to the Vancouver Canucks. It was going to be the difference maker to the Vancouver Canucks. But this it's easy to do, and I always get accused of protecting management. This one's on the players. This one is on the players. There are 8 or 9 guys on this team that, you know, everybody says, oh, he's a good player. Oh, he's a good player. And none of them are playing well.
JT
Miller's not playing well. Bo Horvat's not playing well. Pettersson, you're right, is not playing well. Quinn Hughes has struggled. There are a ton of players on this team that have underachieved, even though this young Dickinson they got from Dallas looked like a great trade. Dickinson has done squat. I mean, everything that they have done in Vancouver, Jim Benning did properly from May to October. Yeah. This October to May part's the problem.
And, you know, Bob, like we've talked about, you know, endlessly on this podcast about how, you know, in Toronto, the Maple Leafs have not won a playoff series since, 2003-04. But what I was really surprised, and I had to go and look it up after I heard this, The Vancouver Canucks have not won a playoff series since 2011, when they went to the Stanley Cup final, which I had the pleasure of covering against the Boston Bruins.
And, other than the bubble.
You know, it just, I never thought when I started looking it up that, oh, they must have won one series, you know, against somebody. And no, it's been that long that they've had a dry spell since they played in the Stanley Cup final 10 years ago. So to your point, this is on the players, but this is more of a big picture organizational thing when you can't even get over that hump. And that's something that I think, it has kind of snowballed with the fans. Because as we know in Toronto, people do not forget when you start going decades without winning a playoff series.
We got to take a break. Speaking of Toronto, let's discuss something a little more pleasant. The performance of the Toronto Maple Leafs. We'll do that when we come back after these messages. It's McCowan, it's Shannon, Mike Zeisberger, Scott Burnside with us. The Toronto Maple Leafs looked like a Stanley Cup contender last year. And for the first four games of their series with the Montreal Canadiens, for the most part, and then fell on their face. We can go back for years, and as Zeisberger indicated, we can go back for years and look at failures by the Toronto Maple Leafs, especially in the first round. Well, always in the first round. Is this different? This team right now is the hottest team in the National Hockey League. It's probably the best team in the National Hockey League overall right now. And they aren't just winning the last little while. They're winning with an exclamation point. They don't look like they have too many flaws. What do we think? Burnside, you're sitting down there in Georgia. I don't know how closely you watch this team. Are they making you believe?
Here we go. I think they're what they should be at this stage. It's a good team with lots of really good players. I mean, Jack Campbell to me was, that was the one of the issues. And of course, with Peter Mrazek hurt almost instantly and then hurt again. it's been interesting to see how Jack Campbell has responded to, that kind of, not just the workload, but just the mental part of it. What a great story. And he's the real deal. I'm curious to see what happens if the NHL goes to the Olympics. Where does he factor in Team USA with, Gibson and Anaheim and Hellebuck and Thatcher Demko, as Zeiss mentioned. But Jack Campbell's been terrific. But for me, the player that has makes this go, and that if you are able to replicate this when it really matters, which of course is a big deal, but what a great start for John Tavares. And, it's been a hard, it hasn't been great for him in Toronto, right? And especially in the playoffs, he has been a guy who has faded at the most critical moments. Well, he was hurt, of course, last year, but it has not been great for John Tavares, but he's playing like everyone expected he would when he signed that deal and he came to Toronto. And if he can keep it up, I think he'll be on that Canadian Olympic team. And he is critically important to getting over the hump, because you know what happens, right? They're going to, unless they win the division, it's a bit of a tall order. So now you're going to play either Florida or Tampa in the first round. That's a big mouthful. And John Tavares is critical to getting over that playoff hump. And he, to me, is the most important player on the Leafs thus far.
Well, Z, I know, you follow this team, cover this team. Is there something different about this year from last year and maybe the year before and the year before that? Because they're playing as well or better than they did last year.
Well, I think the key turnaround, Bob, was the last time I was on this podcast and they were going into Chicago, if you remember. I think they were 2-4-1 and we were talking about, what's going on with the coach? Was the building up of this team flawed? And I think, if you remember that Chicago game, they were down early. And in the first period, first intermission, I guess Wayne Simmonds tore a strip off his teammates. And we talked about earlier in this podcast about the Montreal Canadiens and what veteran leadership means. And there's times where the guy's got to step up. I mean, if you've ever seen Wayne Simmonds mad, that's a pretty scary, intimidating thing. And the Leafs responded with an overtime win. They've won 14 of 16 games since then. The biggest thing that I see with this team is just how their goals against are down, Bob. Like they are, last I checked, I think they're third in the least amount of goals against in the entire National Hockey League. And this is something that, you know, we've talked about for years, ever since this, you know, since this core of Marner and Riley and Matthews got together. They're fun to watch in that, but when the playoffs come around, all of a sudden real estate becomes very, very scarce. And I'm seeing a tenacity in the defensive zone that I haven't seen for a long time. Now, where I caution this, and maybe this is because I'm a lifetime Torontonian and been through this before, it is November. I wonder about their depth on the back end, as much as I like guys like Brody and Muzzin. I mean, I'm a big Riley fan, but we'll have to see what happens if they add there. And the other thing is, yeah, Jack Campbell's been great, but do we have in his body of work any indication that his body can hold up? You know, we'll see. Mrazek's supposed to come back in the next week or so. So I still think there's like pressing questions, but just the fact that they seem to be buying in on the defensive end, that to me is the biggest takeaway that I've got from what this latest Leaf run.
Well, Jack Campbell,
one of the big issues with the Maple Leafs.
Sorry, John, go ahead.
One of the biggest issues that has faced this organization is that after the Big Four, people were suggesting they didn't have any depth. But, you know, David Kampf and Andre Kasha have really played very well in that third or fourth line. And two young Swedish defensemen in Sandin and Lundgren have done a good job getting the puck out of their own zone, too. So all of a sudden, beyond – and by the way, that has taken a ton of pressure off Mitch Marner, because nobody has had a – nobody faces pressure more poorly these days than Mitch Marner has, particularly that in his hometown. But what I see is I see a team with depth. I see a team that we thought couldn't be deep, and all of a sudden they have depth, and that's so vitally important in a 82-game schedule.
Well, they not only have depth. I'm not disagreeing with you in any way, John. And what I don't know about the Toronto Maple Leafs internally would fill volumes. But they're playing better. And I think the head coach has done something here, whether he's changed philosophies, changed scheming. They're getting otherworldly goaltending. You cannot overstate how good Campbell has been. Mm-hmm. He's been fantastic. And then they bring the kid in, who stands on his head. But overall, this is a much sounder defensive team than we've seen the last few years. And they haven't needed to score 5 or 6 goals in a game to have Marner, Matthews, Tavares, Nylander, you know, pumping pucks into the net. They haven't needed that to win. They don't have to score 5 or 6 to win. They can score 1 and win most nights.
Look, Bob, we're so far beyond the days where most goals are like Guy Lafleur chugging down, whipping down the right side with his hair flowing and blasting it from the top of the faceoff circle. Most goals in the modern game are greasy goals coming around the net. We see it night after night, and that accelerates during the playoffs. So they're getting great goaltending. But how many second chance opportunities are you seeing teams get on them right now?
And not many.
To me, that again, that's one of the biggest changes. I mean, if your goalie knows that, you know, rebounds are going to be gotten out of there in a big hurry, guys aren't going to be jamming at you, then they can concentrate more in the way they make the save and the way they contort their body in stopping the first shot and not having to worry about where the puck is going to go after that. And that's one of the big things that I've seen. I mean, you know, I still don't think that Freddie Anderson was as bad as some Leaf fans make him out to be. We're seeing in Carolina what happens if you let Freddie make the first save and guys can clear the rebounds. And right now in Toronto, that's the exact thing that the Leafs are doing very well right now.
Well, and I wonder if we talked about that soft start, and I think if I wasn't, maybe I'm projecting, but I think I was on the podcast when we were talking about the Leafs going into that Chicago game and what was going on and the high level of angst, which is the great thing about Toronto when you have a bad day or two. But I wonder if going through that early in the season and now having emerged from it, listen, every team's going to have those, you know, 2-4-2 or 2-5-3 runs. Every team is, even the best teams. And have the Leafs having gone through that now, having emerged from that, and the next time they go a little bit sideways, I just wonder if they're, if having experienced that early, it will somehow galvanize them. Wonder if that's a good thing.
Yeah.
You have faced early, you come out of it. I mean, Vancouver and Montreal faced it early and never came out of it. So they did come out of it. Maybe they're a better team because of that.
Well, I think there's some value in that. And especially for an org, you know, we sit here and look at 50 plus years of ineptitude and an inability to win a cup. There's nobody on this team that's half, well, most of the guys aren't half that old, but they bear that weight.
Yeah.
And
yeah, Bob, to some extent, but look at, I mean, that doesn't take away from the fact that this core has failed five consecutive times to get out of the first do or die series that they play.
You're absolutely, you're 100% right. But that's not the only weight that fans put on them.
Yeah.
They put on them 50 years of losing, 54 years without a Stanley Cup. And these guys had nothing to do with the vast majority of that. They are responsible for what they've done while they were here.
Mm-hmm.
And there is weight to that. But lump on the previous 50 years of crap, and it's almost impossible to stand up, much less skate. And I think Scotty has a real good point. This bad start that we thought was potentially a GM killer, coach killer for the Toronto Maple Leafs, to have played the way they have over the past 16 games since then, may serve them well when springtime comes around.
Well, again, the one thing I would note, Bob, in all of this is if the first game of the playoffs is May the 1st, what will 112 points mean in the regular season to this team?
Well, what did it mean last year?
And the answer is nothing. It will mean nothing.
Well, they
have to perform in the playoffs no matter what. And that's going to – the pressure – we talked about the pressure early in the season, 2-4-1. The pressure that last week in April and the first week in May is going to be immense. It's going to be immense.
Yeah.
Well – that pressure is shared by every other team that's in the postseason too. Look, I'm not going to sit here at the end of November and project a Toronto Maple Leaf Stanley Cup. I'm not even going to project they can get out of the first round. We don't know. But all you can do is look at the performance and look at the circumstances under which that performance has taken place and say, well, you can't expect much more than this. What it means down the road, who the hell knows?
Yeah.
But right now, they're probably the best team in the National Hockey League right now, as we sit here today. And if you're a Maple Leafs fan, maybe you take that as a good sign. You don't get a whole lot of good signs, if you know what I mean. We got to get out of here. We'll bid you guys a fond adieu. We hope you stay safe. Burnside, don't go out and get a sunburn. Burnside was bragging about 70 degrees in Atlanta today or tomorrow.
Yep. I got sunscreen handy.
Well, we'll send you, Z and I will get together. We'll put some snow in a cardboard box and send it down to you just so you remember what it's like. Thank you, boys. We'll talk again soon.
See you guys.
Mike Zeisberger, Scott Burnside. We'll come back and wrap it after these messages. McCown and Shannon with you. Thanks to Mike Zeisberger, Scott Burnside for joining us.
The only other hockey news we didn't talk about today, Bob, was that John Henry and the people at Fenway Sports officially now are I guess with board approval coming, are the majority owners of the Pittsburgh Penguins. And I don't know what that means, but that's they're still this looking conglomerate's to buy more. Getting bigger.
And they're still looking to buy more.
The other thing I wonder about them is, you know, the one thing that they don't have in their realm is, you know, I mean, they have obviously have the Red Sox and they have a soccer team in the Premier League. They have the Penguins now. Does this mean that when we start talking about expansion in the NBA, that we're going to start hearing about Pittsburgh as an NBA expansion city?
Well, that's interesting, I suppose. I don't necessarily think that's the case. Why do you think that? Why are you connecting those dots?
Well, because this group seems to just wants to become a sports conglomerate. And we do think that the NBA is going to expand in the next 5 years. We think that Seattle is going to be one of the teams, but in theory, you got to go from 30 to 32. So you need, you need one in the West.
You're looking at it from, could be one East, one West, or, you know, you could move a team from division, from conference to conference. Yeah. You just think because the arena gets another tenant, right?
Yeah. And I think that if you're one of these owners that is building out, you're going to say, okay, how can I double my guaranteed gates every year? It just, to me, it's logical.
Well, I mean, Vegas is the other city that's been mentioned often, and I know it's a Western city, but it does have more of a basketball history than Pittsburgh does through college basketball. And they have an arena and. So,
yeah.
And then you'll have a Western team move to the East if that happens.
Yeah, indeed.
We will keep an eye on all of those developments, although I don't think those are imminent. As John mentioned, later this week, we're going to find out. I think it's almost inevitable. There's going to be a work stoppage, an official work stoppage or unofficial work stoppage in baseball that will end all the free agent signings for the time being. And we'll see where we go from there. We'll talk more about it as the week progresses. We thank you for watching or listening, as the case may be. John Shannon, Bob McCallum. See you.